I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Welcome back to yet another episode of AI Named This Show. We're once again your human hosts, if you can believe it or not. I'm Tasia Custodi.
And I'm Tristan Jutra.
So if you're new here on AI Named This Show, we try our best to decode all the jargon around AI and keep you up to date in the fast-moving world of artificial intelligence. And on today's episode, Tristan and I play Doctor with AI. All right, the first story is not going to bode well for those who like to diagnose themselves via Google, or maybe it will, depending on your outlook. But Tristan, maybe you can give me the rundown here on how ChatGPT was recently used to actually successfully diagnose a young boy. Is this for real?
Believe it or not. Now, a lot of us are used to, you know, going to Google or WebMD or whatever, and it turns out we have all the diseases, right? Well, one woman named Courtney had spent 3 years and visited 17 specialists to find a diagnosis for her son Alex's chronic pain, which started after he used a bouncy house during COVID-19. And she had gotten so frustrated with not getting any kind of diagnosis that seemed to fit the bill. So after all of these doctor's visits, hospital visits, tests and whatnot, after ChatGPT came out, she thought, you know what, I'm just going to start putting some of these test results in here and notes that that I receive from these different health specialists, including results from MRIs and whatnot. And what ChatGPT suggested is that her son Alex had something called tethered cord syndrome. And it's sort of a variant of spina bifida. It's a neurological disorder caused by tissue attachments that limit the movement of the spinal cord. So that would, you know, explain the chronic pain when he was trying to move. So she found a neurosurgeon who actually, you know, with this information in hand, and this neurosurgeon confirmed that that's what Alex actually had, tethered cord syndrome, performed surgery and managed to fix it. So she's like, this woman, this mother, she's like, I'm not going crazy after all. You know, she felt validated, and she hopes that other people can be helped by, you know, by doing a little bit of homework on their own side. You know, it's always tricky with, you know, with doctors. They never like to be told what to do. But if you are an advocate for yourself or for your loved ones, you're gathering all the data, perhaps some of these AI tools could be a bit of help to nudge some healthcare professionals in the right direction.
Part of me feels like this is incredible. And the other part of me feels like, uh-oh for me, because I am one of those people I mentioned off the top of the show that one thing happens and I am Googling immediately, like, great, I'm dying. Perfect. So like the difference here, I think we really need to be clear, is that his symptoms kind of progressed and continued over time. And she did kind of think she was crazy at first, but then she was able to put a lot of detail into ChatGPT. So it's remarkable. So just a caveat, obviously don't, you know, it may not get it right every time, but this is something that is so amazing, because this isn't like an everyday diagnosis, Tristan. This isn't just like, oh, he must have hurt his, you know, leg on the jumpy house or whatever. Like, no.
So the good news is that it's early days, and these large language models that have just scooped up so much data and are seem to be doing a reasonable job of making some connections that maybe we can't. And this is something that we'll be talking more and more about as this series goes on, about how these AIs are able to do pattern recognition, whether it's in text or in images and the like. So it's not only for diagnosing, however, AI is being used also to help people with existing conditions.
Oh, yes. I have been itching to talk about this, Tristan. Oh my gosh. So I first stumbled across a New York Times article, and it's about how a woman named Anne Johnson, when she was 30, suffered a massive stroke, and it took her ability to speak. And now, all these years later, AI is helping to restore it for her. So this is a lot to unpack here, and I'll try to kind of dumb it down in ways.
I can understand it.
I was going to say in ways we all can understand, then I was like, no, ways that I can understand. Because when I first read this, I thought, what is even happening here that this is physically working? So she was left paralyzed and unable to talk. And what doctors have done is they have implanted electrodes that, like, in her brain, that can decode her brain signals as she silently tries to speak and say sentences. So she's thinking about what she wants to say. What is happening here is the converted brain signals are kind of written and vocalized into what we would call like our vocalized language. So they've also paired this, as if that wasn't cool enough, with an avatar that's on a computer screen that she can speak words and display smiles. You know, she could display emotions, purse her lips perhaps, and other type of expressions to go along with it. So they've actually made an avatar that is off of her likeness, Tristan. So it's not just like this weird kind of how we're used to like a Siri speech pattern. So they're actually using a video from her wedding, which by the way was 2 years before this happened to her. And she had like a long wedding speech. So they've used this old video to be able to recreate her voice, which is another way they're using AI for her. It's remarkable. So this is the first instance of spoken words and facial expressions being directly synthesized from brain signals. It's honestly hard to comprehend for me. She actually chose her own avatar, which is really, really fun, obviously, to resemble herself. And that, along with her voice from that wedding speech, she said she was able to write this to Pam Bellock, who wrote the New York Times article. She said, quote, "It let me feel like I was a whole person again." Can you even believe this, Tristan?
Well, it's wild. And we need to clarify that this isn't going to solve every issue for people who aren't able to speak, because there are different levels of cognitive ability in people that aren't able to speak. There are some people that are in, you know, sort of a vegetative state, and it might not necessarily unlock anything for them. But she had a stroke, which basically took away her ability to move, but she still had all of her cognitive faculties, and she was locked in, as they say. So she had been communicating with other people using a system where she had a pair of dollar store glasses with a little dot sticker in between the eyes, and she over time she had been able to gain some movement in some parts of her body with it, move her mouth and her face, and still couldn't speak, but she could move her head a little bit, and she could point to things on a screen to pick sentences from a computer screen. But a conversation which would take, you know, 20 seconds between her and someone else would take like 5 to 7 minutes using this computer-aided system. So what it's really done is improve the quality of life for her and for those that she wishes to communicate with and have conversations with so that they can speak a bit more efficiently. And she feels like she's having a more of a normal conversation with people. And it's just wild. Like, this reminds me of the movie Brainstorm, starring Christopher Walken in the early 1980s, where it was the same kind of thing. They were actually working to decode the people's brain signals. And then in that movie, they eventually started to record them, including people's dreams, and it got really wild. But there's a similar sort of progression of the technology here, where right now she is, you know, wired into a system, and they are currently working on wireless versions to eventually make this a little less intrusive for people. Again, this is exciting because it's early days. I know there's experiments they had done with animals a couple of decades ago, like I think we may have mentioned this before, with the tapping into the optic systems of like cats and being able to decode light and dark from the optic nerve. So this is like that, but, you know, with a couple of decades of advancement in decoding different types of signals from the brain, and with machine learning algorithms and some reinforcement from some training from humans to say, yeah, this is what this means, this is what this means. You train it on a set of text, and then it understands what that text looks like in brain waves, and it goes, oh, okay. And then you can basically inform an entire vocabulary for the system, and it ends up like it's reading your mind. It's wild.
Yeah, and not only that, but how the algorithms are designed and how the system works is that because it's always learning, it's going to keep figuring out new language patterns and make things more conversational. And they're actually saying that for in her case, it seems to be right about 3/4 of the time, which I think is pretty impressive. So there are instances where it doesn't quite pick up that proper word. Maybe like a preposition might mm-hmm. be off, and that mm-hmm. you know how much that could screw up a whole sentence. But I mean, to consider how far and how fast we've come with this, 3/4 of the time for somebody that was, you know, basically doing pointing with her eyes before and it taking so long to just communicate, you know, basic needs, this opens up just so much more for her. It's incredible. And, you know, like they're saying, like, approved wireless versions might be available within the next decade, which is crazy. Because like you mentioned, I mean, right now, obviously she's attached. It literally goes from her brain through a wire to a computer. So to think of how fast that development can happen, it's crazy. And also, like you said, you know, this isn't a blanket thing that's going to work for everybody because everybody's situation is different. And also because they're still experimenting on different methods for implantation. So they might be able to implant something a bit different, a bit deeper in a bit different section of the brain. And so there's all these little nuances, but boy, I have been sitting on this. It's just so exciting. This is the type of stuff when we talk about AI, when you and I were like, we got to make a show on AI. This is the stuff, Tristan.
it feels like science fiction, but it's science fact. And it's, again, this is a progression. It feels like early days, but this kind of research has been happening for decades. But just imagine where it's going to be in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, miniaturization, you know, wireless technologies, the increased capacities of the machine learning models to do this. And they're even talking about how they can, you know, speed up the training process rather than having to, recite mentally 1,000 different words. They're talking about, you know, 39 word parts or phonemes so that you can assemble, the words linguistically and like how we normally speak. And sort of like a type of an expanded alphabet, but phonemes instead of letters. So that really opens up quite a larger variety of words that the AI might be able to decode, because it's using the sounds how words sound in your head as opposed to specific words themselves.
Not to dumb this down, but it is so cool. You know what I mean? Like, we are in the future. It is here. It is now. Before we jump ahead, though, we got to link this for people, Tristan, because there are videos. So there's a few different links. I'm kind of referencing a New York Times one, but there are a couple different articles that have been written on Anne, and she's just absolutely incredible. She travels all the way from Saskatchewan, Canada to, is it San Francisco that she's going and doing this to? I mean, they are days in their van to do this. She's kind of now dedicating her life to this research to help others. She's absolutely incredible. You guys have to see the videos that are accompanying these articles, because if you think this blows your mind, wait till you see it and how they implement it in real life. It's just, oh, this is it, man.
Yeah. And she was very patient. It took 18 years from when her stroke happened. She's been locked in for 18 years. And now, in a way, she's got her voice back. So there are other types of, all sorts of research happening in health and medicine. And there's a lot happening in the fields of drug research. And there are, one can think of, certain pandemics, for example. But the great thing about AI is its ability to process vast amounts of data. And they're talking about how AI can accelerate drug discovery, and how the scientists are using AI to discover new antibiotics, such as Allicin, and predicting the structure and interaction of proteins and molecules. So you may recall several years ago now, when I first got my PlayStation 3, I think it was 2007 I got it, there was some software that you could load on it called Folding at Home. And this was a crowdsourcing project for scientific research for protein folding, because proteins can be folded in potentially millions, if not billions, of different ways. And there's only a certain number of ways that actually make sense, and you can make useful, therapeutics from them, for example. So what this project did is let people with their home computers and ultimately their PlayStation 3s download and run this software, and then have them running while you're not using your computer. I mean, you could do it while you're using your computer if you wanted to, but generally it's using the idle time. And so I'd leave my PS3 on at night running this Folding at Home just to be part of the project. Similar to other projects like SETI at Home, which were scanning reams of data from radio telescopes and looking for signs of extraterrestrial life. So Folding at Home actually was retired a number of years ago, but what's taken its place is the use of these AI machine learning models, which can test millions of combinations of protein folding sort of methods, or you can tell I'm not a scientist, but it can test millions of protein folds, let's call them, and compounds that would result in a fraction of the time than traditional methods would take, and even faster than these legions of computers out there. It's important to note that it's not a magic bullet, because these systems still need human guidance and validation, especially in safety-critical domains, in healthcare being one of them, of course. And there's something called human reinforcement learning, which is part of this, but after a while, then the machines start learning from themselves. We also need a bit of the reliability, trust, and ethics angles guided by humans as well, because the AI itself is sort of amoral. And right now, the systems aren't able to produce drugs without any human intervention at this point. But at some point, they might get there. So, I mean, there is this potential to revolutionize the whole area of drug discovery and address the problems of things like drug-resistant diseases, which kill hundreds of thousands of people every year. We hear about superbugs, antibiotic-resistant diseases, which are brutal. If you get something like that, you can throw every antibiotic in the world at you and it might not work. So AI is being used to try to find novel treatments, novel antibiotics that can treat some of these superbugs. So the idea is that you can do this, you can have better results, lower costs, and improve the quality overall of this drug development. And eventually, you combine this with the amazing efforts that have been made in genetic research, decoding the human genome, which the original project was, it was like 20 years ago, the Human Genome Project, and it was like $1 billion to decode the human genome. And now you can do it for like 10 bucks. It's just wild. So you start when these fields start to come together, we talked previously about combining things like AI and quantum computing. Well, you combine AI and genetic research and things like CRISPR and being able to create novel organisms or therapeutics. I mean, who knows what's going to end up happening? It's very exciting, but it can also be a little scary. So you have to make sure that the ethics piece is definitely part.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Part of it. So one of the first ones that are on people's mind is like, well, what do we do about people that got COVID? There's been a number of treatments. Some work better than others. And of course, some researchers are focusing their efforts on COVID antivirals. So just to be clear, we're not talking about vaccines per se, but these are therapeutics for once someone already has COVID. What do you do? I mean, you get people on ventilators, and there's been mixed results with those. There's been a number of different types of treatments that have been controversial and have mixed results and controversial findings and so on. But these researchers in a couple of different camps are using AI tools to help generate COVID antivirals. One group is from IBM and Oxford University, and they're finding that the antivirals can be made, designed, validated in months. So this whole mRNA technology was wild, how quickly we were able to sequence the COVID genome. Now you put the sort of similar kind of technologies, especially aided with AI, to actually help treat the symptoms once people have them, so we don't lose people once they actually have once they get COVID-19. So IBM and Oxford have this one, and then we heard back in January there's this another company, a China-based company with some Canadians involved, called In Silico.
Yeah, so for the first time ever, a COVID-19 drug entirely designed by generative AI is not only approved for human use, but it's actually beginning clinical trials already. So here's the drug name. It's really, really fancy. ISM-3312, or as I'm going to call it, ISM-3312. But the cool thing here is that it was discovered in mere months. Okay, like when we think of the time saving here. So what they did was they slotted a 3D structure of 3CL proteins into one of their in-house AI programs. And within a matter of days, the model was able to generate about 20 different potential drug candidates from scratch. Now, obviously, the founder and CEO of, is it In Silico? Is that how we're saying
it? No, In Silico, which means in glass.
In Silico.
Yeah.
Jeez, I thought this was like a fancy
In Silico. That's the Italian
word or something. Yeah, I was like, wow, In Silico. I'm learning so much today. Now, obviously, the CEO, he's pumping it up. So I just want to preface. I've pulled a few quotes of his that I want to preface with saying, take everything with a grain of salt because this is the CEO of this company. But he is saying, quote, the molecule is so stable, it is an absolutely novel molecule not found in any of the libraries of known therapeutics, which is a pretty big statement. But he's saying that, because they've made this advancement and it showed a lot of promises in the studies that were done on mice, we don't know the results yet of the human trial, but he is saying, basically, this changes the game. If his company would have been given funding back when the pandemic first started. He's saying, like, if he had to do this again with now the push and the funding and the support that he has from other, like, insurance companies and all the pharmaceuticals, he could redo this and develop something else in under a year. I mean, it's remarkable. And I think end of the year, we're going to see the results of just the first clinical trial. So there's going to be multi-phase and different groups. But I mean, he's really pumping this up. He also said something about, and I hesitate to say it, but he did also mention something about how it possibly, in his mind, could be used to be preventative as well. Don't want to talk too much about that because I don't want to push that rhetoric a bit too much. But he is also saying that it doesn't, at least in the mice, which take that for what you will, it didn't have a lot of the side effects that you would see that other people had, like, say, the rebound effect from, was it Paxlovid or one of the other ones? I can't remember.
Paxlovid, but, yeah.
You know, that rebound COVID effect. So he's saying, like, he doesn't expect that to be the case either. So I'm really curious. We have to do a follow-up on this. End of the year, if we get the results of at least round one of the clinical trial, which if we don't get results, you mean it means we know it didn't go well. But we got to do a follow-up.
Yeah. And so in June, they would go into clinical trials. And just to be clear, like, they started on this back in 2020, came out our radar around January this year. But they got going as soon as the pandemic hit. And they'd had some struggles with, like you mentioned, with funding, even with access to the viruses, just because the priority was being given to the big pharmaceutical companies in part of Operation Warp Speed in the United States and its analogs elsewhere in the world. But like you said, you know, being able to do it all over again with what they know now and what, you know, the funding that they have now, they could do things a lot more quickly. And some of the results are starting to filter through from some of those first clinical trials. Early results look like it might be effective against every variant so far. So that's promising. And then this antiviral could be taken orally as well. So for those people who aren't a big fan of getting needles. So again,
yeah, it's not a vaccine.
No, not a vaccine. This is, if you've already got COVID, then how do we make sure you don't get seriously ill or die from it? So moving from, you know, treatments of those who have COVID, how do we, you know, avoid or predict the next pandemic? And there are researchers that are working to help us avoid the next pandemic, or at least prepare, figure out where it's going to come from. Especially, I mean, it's tricky nowadays with so much misinformation and disinformation being out there. But a Toronto-based company called Blue Dot was among the first to detect signs of what later became known as COVID-19.
Yeah, did you hear about this when it first happened? Because this is back, by the way, in December of 2019. So just to set the scene, we were all so naive. So young, so naive. We didn't know what was coming. But this company...
Sorry, hold that thought. I remember early 2020, I was sitting at McDonald's after playing floor hockey with friends. And it was just me and one other guy, one of our goalies. We're sitting there, and up on the TV screen, there was a news story about, oh, this coronavirus thing. There's a bit of an outbreak in China. And we were I remember saying to him, he's like, I wonder if this is going to go anywhere. Or right. If this is, you know, like, is this going to affect us?
What we didn't know. Oh, my gosh.
So these cats were on the case in late 2019, you say?
Yes. So what they did was they used AI to scour tens of thousands of articles every single day in dozens of languages. And its system actually ended up spotting an article about what was, quote, a pneumonia of unknown cause. And that was on the morning of December 31st, 2019.
Happy
and
New
Year's
guess
Eve. What? Yeah, New Year's Eve. Happy New Year to you. They were able to send out an alert to their clients on the same day. That's, to put this into perspective, about a week before the US, the CDC and the World Health Organization issued their own alerts. And I mean, we're not going to get into the whole kerfuffle that was happening around that. But like, they literally got ahead of this thing. Now, obviously... with great responsibility.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Yes, exactly. And great risk.
I'm here for the Spider-Man quote. So, yeah.
Yes. So obviously these models work by trying to detect the relationship between words. It's not necessarily detecting whether or not these words are factual. So hence, you can have a lot of misinformation spread just as quickly as a pandemic, if you will, when it's in the wrong hands. So it's very, very cool technology, but we do need to kind of be thinking about how do we put these safeguards in place to be able to also identify not just logical words, but words that are not, are actually factual, and then fact check it before you spread the information.
Yeah. And there are ways, you know, rather than just like, I mean, you can look at the news ecosystem for some signals, some red flags, but if you tap into other sources, say health information networks, where they may have details about what are thought to be, say, flu diagnoses. And that is one of the things that have came up, like in various hospitals. Oh, we're seeing these, you know, upper respiratory, you know, tract infections. We're not sure. So if you have data feeds coming in from all sorts of sources or, you know, around the world and tracking the different types of infections and like, oh, we're seeing some trends here. Is this actually the flu or is this something else? Then you could always cross-reference with other information. I mean, there are some systems that look at the sewer systems and what's being detected in there. But you could also compare and contrast with feeds coming through the news wires and whatnot and different reports of potential outbreaks or illnesses or what have you. But that's the power of these machine learning systems, is to analyze these vast troves of data and try to find the patterns in them. And so it's not necessarily just about the next COVID outbreak. It could be, you know, the next polio outbreak in the developing world. And one late breaking story just before we went to record is about a Canadian university that is using AI to help combat infectious diseases in the developing world, specifically the global south. And here's another one of these great names for you, Tasia. This program is called AI4PEP, which is the Artificial Intelligence for Pandemic and Epidemic Preparedness Network.
It rolls off the tongue.
Yes, exactly. It's just... So similar to the COVID-specific one, is merging knowledge from researchers, policymakers, and local community experts to create AI-powered tools tailored to specific countries and needs. And it's received millions and over $7 million in funding. And there are projects, 16 projects from 47 countries across Africa, Asia, Latin America, the Caribbean, and the Middle East. So they're focusing on early detection of diseases, warning systems, response, and mitigation and control of epidemics, using an approach that values local knowledge and data. And that last part's key, because sometimes, you know, we have our own, you know, Western medicine way of thinking about things, and sometimes we miss signals. So by tapping into local knowledge, and they may use different language, they may have, you know, different therapies for folks, and whether those therapies work or not, if they're able to tune in to what folks are doing, you know, on the ground in these developing countries, they may be able to ingest some of those data points into these systems to help, you know, detect and mitigate the next potential epidemic or pandemic, as the case may be. We want to try to get a handle on any emerging infectious disease outbreaks, wherever they are, and not just COVID-related ones. So there's so much happening in the world of AI and healthcare and medicine and research. It's still relatively early days.
We could have had just a whole AI show, an entire podcast, not episode, podcast dedicated to AI and health. It's wild. And we're going to keep you updated. That's our promise. Well, thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of AI Name This Show. Because we're still new, we would absolutely love your feedback. You can email us at feedback@AINamedThisShow.com. You can also find us anywhere you get your podcasts. So be sure to give us a follow, share this episode, leave us a review. That also really helps people find this podcast as well.
5 stars, preferably.
Yeah, 5 stars, please. Come on. 5 stars or just leave it. What are you even listening to this for if it's not 5 stars? We're also on all of the socials. We are at AI Name This Show on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and the platform formerly known as Twitter and more. So once again, thank you so much for joining us for another riveting episode. Bye.
Bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.